With the eruption of hostilities in the Mideast, President Eisenhower went before a special session of Congress on January 5th to present his proposal to check communist aggression in that area. The president had this to say.
I am convinced that the best insurance against this dangerous contingency is to make clear now our readiness to cooperate fully and freely with our friends of the Middle East in ways consonant with purposes and principles of the United Nations. It would, first of all, authorize the United States to cooperate with and assist any nation or group of nations in the general area of the Middle East in the development of economic strength dedicated to the maintenance of national independence. It would, in the second place, authorize the executive to undertake in the same region programs of military assistance and cooperation with any nation or group of nations which desires such aid. It would, in the third place, authorize such assistance and cooperation to include the employment of the armed forces of the United States to secure and protect the territorial integrity and political independence of such nations, requesting such aid against overt armed aggression from any nation controlled by international communism.
Today we are pleased to have with us on the American Forum two leading members of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman John Voorhees, Republican of Ohio, and Congressman Clement Zablocki, Democrat of Wisconsin. Gentlemen, let's begin with this question. Now, since Israel has promised to pull its men out of Aqaba and Gaza, is there still a need for the Eisenhower Middle East resolution? Mr. Zablocki, how do you feel?
I believe there was no need for the Eisenhower Doctrine, which was identified and proposed in the resolution, and it is not needed now, and because it departs from our constitutional process and would violate the constitutional checks and balances. The resolution was not made possible or was unnecessary because we haven't received the sufficient evidence to point up its need.
Before you go into the details of that, let me get Mr. Voorhees' opinion.
Resolution's needed now. Every day's delay increases the danger. There's still danger of Soviet aggression, direct and indirect, out there. And we need this doctrine to prevent Soviet war through miscalculation and to prevent Soviet subversion playing on political and economic instability out there.
You don't see it that way, Mr.
No, I do not. I don't think we have to. The Soviets do not depend any resolution or any action by Congress or any, I think, the statements made by the Executive Department, the conflicting statements, the lack of a policy in the Middle East in the past, the proclamations and statements made during the campaign would probably invite a miscalculated war last year. And if the resolution was at all needed, it was probably needed last year, certainly along about the time of the election.
Well, now, do you think had there been any chance, Mr. Zablocki, to call Congress down here in a special session the week before the election while the British and French were and Israeli were carrying on their adventures in Egypt? Why, there wouldn't have been a chance. The timing of this thing was just about right. There was no Democrats suggested it last year. The British and French and Israeli move into Suez made it all the more necessary. It was considered by having a special session in December, but then it was thought that there was time enough, if we acted on it fast, to bring it up as soon as Congress got back. And that was a proper time.
Mr. Voorhees, if time was an element, why wasn't Congress called in session at the time of the Suez or immediately after the election? If time was an element, why did we have to wait till January? And then why was the resolution introduced through the channels as it has been? It hasn't received the consultation and advice of the Congress. I think it was very poorly introduced. It was unnecessary, and we haven't to this time had substantiating evidence that there's a danger of overt aggression in that area. Oh, there's always a danger of aggression. That danger was there a year ago, 6 months ago, and it is there now.
Now, wait a minute. You brought up one thing about the way this was introduced. I was down here with a bipartisan group in August, again in November 9th. And we were told then we'd probably be brought back again in December, but it was found that it was inconvenient. Well, so we met here for 4 hours in the White House on New Year's Day and went over this doctrine. It had leaked through the British the weekend before. But before this resolution was introduced, it was taken up with our committee, and you were there.
No, I was not.
Well, in any case, I regret you were not
there. I was not, Prep.
But before January 5th.
I should say I was not invited to be there.
No, before our Foreign Affairs Committee, Secretary Dulles came down and read the thing over to us before it was introduced and before the message
came
out.
That was not in
that isn't
consular.
I'm talking about in January.
In January. It was on the first Wednesday in January that the meeting was called very hurriedly. Most members could not be there. I was not advised in time to be in Washington. That is why I was not at that joint meeting.
Is it true that Secretary Dulles leaked this to a group of newsmen and that the men on Capitol Hill got their information from headlines?
No, that is... what happened was this, that in consulting with the British and the French and the others about the possibility of this sort of thing, the British knew about it, and the leak came, I was informed...
American newspaper.
Through London, through British sources, to enterprising reporter. The purpose of the administration to present the thing first on January 1st, when there was a bipartisan meeting. Unfortunately, I don't believe you were there, but members of our committee were there, and the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, and the thing was explained. They didn't even have a draft of a resolution.
Let's go back to the moment, if we may, Mr. Voorhees. Do you feel that the President has put Congress in the embarrassing position now of forcing them to go along with this doctrine just to show our unity to the Soviets and the rest of the world?
Well, I think that congressmen who failed to go along are going to be embarrassed, but the President did what was his duty when he thought it was a situation that required prompt action by the Congress. He brought it to them as soon as they were in session, before he even made his State of the Union message. And that was his duty under our Constitution and our system to call for this action where congressional action was needed. And I thoroughly agree, however, that some members of Congress are going to be embarrassed.
I see no reason why any member should be embarrassed. I voted against the resolution only because I believe that we should follow our constitutional process. I don't think a member of Congress need be embarrassed because he feels that the founding fathers had written a document that still stands and can hold water. I see no reason why we should be embarrassed.
Well, then you
because
don't think...
there's sufficient evidence that the United States Congress and the people of the United States are unified, and we are entirely in agreement with a containment policy, and that's all the Eisenhower Doctrine is a continuation of the Truman containment policy, which had been fired upon during his administration, during the past administration. That's all it is.
Well, now, wait a minute.
It's not a dramatic departure from our past policy.
Mr. Voorhees,
go
ahead.
All right. You brought up something before that you come to now. You say, is there any danger? Is there any need for this? You say there's no necessity for it. There is just as much necessity for this as there was for the Truman Greek-Turkish policy that I helped to put through Congress when he was president 10 years ago, which has been successful. There was the same need for it that there was for the Formosa resolution that was put through 2 years ago. This was an easy, simple thing, but what it required and needed was prompt and united action, which it got in the House 355-61, and I regret deeply it is not getting in the Senate.
Well, the Formosa resolution had only three votes opposed to it, but not since you brought the Greek-Turkish resolution of Formosa. The present resolution has there's no analogy to it. There was a civil war in Greece. There was overaggression at the time when Truman requested the use of the armed forces or to the legislation authorizing him to take certain steps in Greece. In Formosa, the Pescadores Islands, as well as as Taiwan itself, was being threatened.
Now, we're going back a little far there, Mr. Zablocki.
Over-digression.
Let's not go back
now,
too far. Let's stay up here now.
To the Middle East situation.
That's right.
There was no evidence. Have you heard of any evidence that there was an imminent threat of over-digression? Covert aggression, yes. But the resolution does not deal with covert aggression
or
subversion.
Yes, it does. Now, you're getting off. Wait, let's finish with one thing at a time. As Secretary Dulles told our committee, there's just as much evidence of danger now as there was with when we founded NATO, and certainly as far as Turkey was concerned in the Greek-Turkish matter. He said there are forces in being right across the lines. There is the Soviet still proclaimed intention to rule the world, and as he said, there is no evidence of overt aggression against the United States right now. Nevertheless, we spent about $38 billion in preparing for our defense because we know that the capability is there, the intention to do it if they get the chance. And therefore, what we needed to do here, and what is needed now and every day makes it more necessary, is that we proclaim our unity in this matter so that we will remove the danger of Soviet war by miscalculation.
You agree in the, that...
In Korea.
Well, let me go to Mr. Zablock before
you
go to Korea.
You agree there is no imminent overt aggression.
What do you mean? Somebody coming across a border right now?
That is true, in the Middle East.
Well, we had...
There's a danger.
No, we had...
But there's no...
There's a matter of flyovers that is a... Since it's rather mysterious, it's a serious matter. But that's the
which would necessitate the resolution of the type so far-reaching, so indefinable?
Very definable.
Well, how would you define the Middle East? Now, whoever could...
You mentioned flyovers. I mean, what does this mean? Flyovers by Soviet planes?
Well, they're up high, and the local people have no way of identifying certain planes that are coming over. There are Soviet arms going into Syria and into Egypt, evidence possibly that more of them are going in. As far as subversion and infiltration goes, the Senate committee says there are 60 trade agreements made in the past 18 months as the Soviets take advantage of the power vacuum there to creep in where they wanted to get for centuries. Now, in Korea, the day before the attack, we got no word of it before our committee, and we were inquiring into it. Do we wait until there's an attack? Is that what you mean?
No.
Then it would be too late, because this kind of warfare, things happen in a great big hurry.
You don't wait until an attack happens to pass a resolution of this type. You are prepared to deal with aggression. And the best way, the only way, in my opinion, to deal with aggression of any sort in any area of the world, including the Middle East, is by having an effective United Nations. And specifically in the Middle East, is to deal with the very basic problems which this resolution doesn't deal with.
Now, it was the breakdown in the United Nations that caused us to start in on regional arrangements such as NATO, that I'm sure you supported, such as the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization that you supported, such as the arrangements we've made with 42 nations. But there's a gap in the Middle East from Turkey on one end to Pakistan on the other where we don't have any firm arrangements, and that is, so long as it stands, just an invitation to Soviet aggression and infiltration.
Let me ask Mr. Boris.
All of those pacts and treaties you refer to are on a bilateral and multilateral arrangement. This resolution deals practically on a unilateral basis. It's entirely different. We're going to go it alone.
No.
We're going to go it alone.
No, we're not going to go it alone because we don't furnish military or economic aid. We don't use our armed forces unless there's a request from another nation, so that it's always got to be bilateral. And
well,
this unilateral talk about
Mr. Boris,
things that I've never understood.
After a nation is a victim of aggression, how can it request our assistance, military or economic?
In a big hurry.
By the Commons? How in a big hurry?
Once this resolution goes into effect, then... Then the president has unquestioned authority. If a hurry-up call comes, if aggression starts, that then, upon request, we can help that country to protect its political independence and territorial integrity. That's what this is about. You say it isn't anything specific? That's exactly what it authorizes the president to do.
But the president has that authority.
No.
He himself states so.
No, he says...
And Dulles had, in the presentation of his testimony, stated that he thought the president had
it. He says...
All he wanted is an expression from Congress.
The president and the Secretary of State, they thought that the president needed additional authorization. Now, it's true that the followers of President Truman, in order to defend what he did in Korea, keep on saying, well, the president could do this anyhow. But I think it's quite interesting that President Truman has come out and endorsed the authorization that the present President Eisenhower requests. In any case, you can get, as you say, if you say all that is needed, that he already has the authority, all is needed is an expression from Congress backing him up, then why don't you jump in and back him up with voting for this thing if you think all is needed is an expression of solidarity?
Well, I think a concurrent resolution would do just exactly that, and that is why I introduced, as a substitute, the concurrent resolution proposal. I don't think we should give a predated blank check, a declaration, practically a declaration of war to the president.
Now,
which not only the President Eisenhower will have, but the authorization will be continuing, whoever may be there.
Now, do you think that the arrangements we've got with these other 42 nations constitute a predated blank check declaration of war?
They're not as far-reaching as...
They're a declaration of peace. As Secretary Dulles says, this is a declaration of peace in order to stop World War III before it starts.
It doesn't make any difference what you call it. It's what the language contains and what far-reaching that it is and the departure that it is from the Constitution that we must bear in mind. It's not what you say.
Speaking of the blank check, gentlemen, $200 million is the figure we've heard now asked for. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, the opponents say that this is going to cost billions before we get through. Now, guarantees do you have that they're going to keep it down?
We have merely in the reports from committees in both bodies and in the speeches of the advocates of it, the proposition that the passage of this commits no one to the expenditure of anything else. The president himself has said he's going to ask for more, and both bodies very carefully said, well, we'll take that up when it comes along. This isn't new money, you know. This is money that's already been appropriated. We've got a precedent for this. We had a $200 million Southeast Asia fund, an emergency fund, about 3 years ago. We had a $100 million Middle East fund 2 years ago. And we had this $250 million development fund so that there are precedents for everything that's asked in here.
Mr. Zabocki.
There's no question. Now, you're correct in stating that the author of the money is there. There is no new money in the $200 million requested. If that is true, why doesn't the president use the money now? And I know that you'll probably say, well, there are certain limitations and restrictions on the money now available to him. But I'm sure if it's going to be a immediate impact program, he will not be able to expend but a fraction of that $200 million. Let him use as much as he possibly can before we deal with the Mutual Security Bill of 1957. And then an orderly process, when Congress would have an opportunity to thoroughly study it, when we have our new Mutual Security Bill, an amount sufficient for what the president wants to do. And then at that time, probably the executive department could tell us just exactly what they intend to do with it. We haven't been told.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Been justified.
No, yes, it was.
Oh, it was.
Here's what was planned, that we would pass this thing rapidly, that Congressman Richards, ex-Congressman Richards, who was the distinguished
beloved
gentleman. Chairman of our Foreign Affairs Committee, would go out there and would find out the needs and would take care of the immediate situations caused by the blocking of the canal, which has messed up the economies of a lot of these countries, would take
Taking
care
up the
of
cabin, Jordan.
Would take up the face any military needs based along by the four northern tier states, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, and Pakistan, all of which have requested through their missions this sort of action. What it was expected was that we'd go out there, take care of the immediate things, because don't forget that this thing, the authority for the $200 million additional authorization, it isn't an additional amount, but certain taking off certain limitations, expires June 30th. And so long as we stall and mark time and debate, of course, the period in which it can be used at all is shortened.
Yeah.
I doubt very much whether there'll be any $200 million used under this authorization in the time that's left.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that admission. Let me join with the gentleman that our former chairman, Mr. Richards, is an eminent emissary to send to that area, and I'm sure he's going to do a very, very good job.
Mr. Zabocki, are you Democrats stalling around on the Hill on passing this? Is there any politics in this, or why isn't it getting through the Congress?
I think it would go through Congress just like that if it could be justified, if we'd had the sufficient amount of evidence to show that it was needed.
Well,
if there was any evidence of imminent aggression, overt armed aggression, we would pass this resolution without any difficulty. If we could be assured that the amount that the authorization requested for the financial part of this Section 3 of the resolution could be justified, we'd pass it. I'm sure that Mr. Richards is going to do a very good job in the Middle East. But this resolution was not necessary in order to create that special ambassadorial job for him. I think that he could have been sent by the executive with his commission to make a study there's a sufficient amount of money left for, as you say, the immediate emergency programs in the authorization and appropriation at the present at the disposal of the executive, and then he could come back with his report stating just exactly what should be done, and we'd do, as I said earlier, we'd handle it in an orderly manner.
Yes, the way this Democrat Congress has been handling it, they certainly would have handled it fast. Here was, if Richards had gone out and come back and had then presented the proposition, we'd have then had, as we have now, running into 2.5 months before he would have acted on that.
Do you maintain
this
that
is in a this is a situation where some of those countries are economically unstable, some of them politically unstable, and there's a vacuum in power, and some of them are in fear of Soviet aggression, whether you think so or not. They're scared.
They are
and
scared.
They want some real assurance. And this would have given it to them in a hurry. They also want some assurance that they're not going to have to turn to the Soviets for every type of economic aid they need. This would have given them assurance. If the Senate had acted fast, we'd have had Richards on his way out there, and he wouldn't say, after I talk to you, I'm going back, and Congress may, in the middle of the summer, do something about this. Well, he could have said, I can take care of that one now. Take care of that one now.
Well, couldn't the President have sent Mr. Richards in January? What had prevented him from sending Mr. Richards in January?
Because if he had, you needed the...
Needed what?
You needed the expression of unity, of unity for action, which this joint resolution, this bill, would make possible, and you didn't need merely, well, let me say that.
Unity of
the
action.
President of the United States felt that in view of the way Congress... A Republican Congress had backed a Democrat president on the Greek-Turkish proposition, the way a Democrat Congress had backed a Republican president on the Formosa proposition, in view of the way a Democrat Congress had backed him on creating a special fund for the Southeast Asia. He thought, and he had every right to think, in view of the stern necessities, and everybody in this country realizes there's an unstable turmoil and troubled situation out there, he thought he would get prompt action from Congress.
You would have a demonstration of action and uniformity if the President would have sent the nomination of our friend Mr. Richards to the Senate. There's no question, but it would be unanimously passed, confirmed, and he would be on his way to that area bringing back a report at the earliest possible moment. Now, you stated that there was a during the Greek-Turkish, now I hate to go back that far, but our own Secretary of State, the present Secretary of State, Dulles, didn't feel in his speeches on the Senate floor, while a senator didn't believe that the President should be given such wide and broad authority at that time, at the time when we had a demonstration of overt aggression. Well, let's come back to the Middle East.
Now, wait a minute. We didn't have any... Just one more word on this good old Greek-Turkish thing. There was no overt Soviet aggression. There was a civil war backed by commies in Greece. There wasn't any overt aggression in Turkey. Now, that's the situation. You've got a situation somewhat comparable to it, although unquestionably this is a bigger area and a graver issue and crisis that faces
us
now.
Mr. Ford, do you feel that Russia will sit back and quietly let the United States operate on a major scale in the Mideast here with economic and perhaps military aid?
Well, Russia has screamed 2 or 3 times loudly since this thing has been pending, I think for the purpose of scaring off timid congressmen and senators and for the purpose of scaring off people in the Middle East. But don't forget, Russia is not, that's why time is of the essence of it. Russia is not sitting back quietly now. Russia is penetrating into this area as fast as they can, hoping to realize their dream of the last 200 or 300 years to get into a position of strength in the Middle East. Meanwhile, one of the legislative bodies fiddles. As I say, the House acted promptly and decisively.
It's just too bad that this administration had vacillated. Otherwise, the Soviets would have never got into the Middle East.
No, wait a minute.
The reason that the Middle East situation has deteriorated to the point that it is because, and the only reason that the nations in that area are so fearful, because they don't know exactly how and in what position, what our policy is, how this administration stands, and it has to have the Congress to step back.
Now, who vacillated? Here's the situation in the Middle East. The Truman administration attempted to launch the MEADO, Middle East Defense Organization, and I was for it. but they couldn't put the thing together. So Dulles went out and he conceived the idea of the Northern Tier. Let's at least get the Northern places together.
Which we're unwilling to join.
He got that together.
Which we are unwilling to join.
And that's right. And we certainly shouldn't, now that Britain's a member of it. We don't need to tie up with the British and French right now if we want to win friends and influence people in the Middle East. Therefore, this policy, this doctrine, was conceived and...
Quick question.
May I just ask you, who are you going to tie up with the Middle East if you're not going to tie up with the French and the British?
We are going to tie up with the countries in the Middle East that want to maintain their own independence and with any groups of such countries, and that's what's provided in this law that's already passed.
I understand by tie up you mean the cooperation of
cooperation,
the British
that's
and
right.
the French included.
Well, they're not in the Middle East anymore.
Well, you...
No. What in this... We say we will cooperate with nations in the Middle East that want to maintain their independence.
This is very interesting, gentlemen. I don't like to do this, but I must interrupt. Our time is up. Thank you very much for being with us today. Our guests have been Congressman John Voorhees, Republican of Ohio, and Congressman Clement Zablocki, Democrat of Wisconsin. The nation's first discussion program, the American Forum, is now in its 28th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. Now, this is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.
For reprints of today's discussion on the American Forum, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington, 18, D.C. Join us again next week at this time when NBC will present Youth Wants to Know. May we remind you that the annual Red Cross Drive is now underway. Join and serve. The American Forum is produced by its founder, Theodore Granick, directed by Renee Marichal. This is Ray Quinn speaking. This has been an NBC presentation.
Our thanks to Steve McCormick and his guests on the American Forum, Congressman John Voorhees, Republican of Ohio, and Congressman Clement J. Zablock, Democrat of Wisconsin. Now here's a message that may be important to your future. Now is the time to invest more in United States savings bonds. How about starting to buy your savings bonds in larger denominations? Bigger bonds are just as easy to buy, and you can save twice as much. For a bigger slice of security, better home, more comfortable retirement, step up your investment to the next larger denomination of U.S. savings bonds. Remember, U.S. savings bonds are fully guaranteed and protected against loss, theft, or destruction. Join the payroll savings plan where you work, or buy bonds regularly where you bank. Monitor at Radio Central. Back in a moment.
This is Monitor, the NBC Weekend Radio Service.